And then if you tack on media partnerships, content agreements, it really does tilt the business case for these companies in a way that's, you know, going to leave a lot of losers and maybe fewer winners in the battle.
Hey gang, it's Thursday, January 25th. Yuri and listeners, welcome to the Behind the Numbers Daily and eMarketer podcast. I'm Marcus. Today I'm joined by our principal analyst who heads up our media advertising and technology desks based in New Jersey. It's Yuri Wormser.
Hey Marcus, how are you?
Hey fella, very good. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Perfect. So, today's fact, bananas are a little bit radioactive. You knew this, didn't you? You knew this.
I've been on a banana fix the last few weeks for some reason, and I did know it was radioactive.
You're so feeling ill? Is that why you...
I just turned off the lights and checked if I was glowing. It wasn't, so it was good.
So luckily, it's not too radioactive. According to the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, bananas have naturally high levels of potassium, and a small fraction of all potassium is radioactive. But you would need to eat about 100 bananas to receive the same amount of radiation exposure as you get each day in the US from natural radiation in the environment. So, you'll be fine, Yuri. How many are you eating?
Not that many.
A questionable amount? Okay.
Not more than a few dozen. No, it's just...
A day?
It's probably about two a day.
All right, you might want to see your doctor. why are bananas curved, Yuri? Do you know this one too?
No idea about that.
Okay. Because of a phenomenon called negative geotropism. Instead of continuing to grow toward the ground, they start to turn towards the sun. The fruit grows against gravity, giving the banana its familiar curved shape. I think the listeners can tell we're running out of interesting facts when you've reached why bananas are curved slightly. Let's get on with the show before listeners stop listening. Today's real topic, AI in 2024. In today's episode, first in the lead, we'll cover the most important things to pay attention to when it comes to artificial intelligence in 2024. Then for another news, we'll discuss how much AI keys on keyboards will move the needle for AI. So Yuri, we're going to be talking about a number of different focal points, expectations surrounding artificial intelligence in the year of 2024. We'll go through multimodal chatbots, copyright issues, what's going on with OpenAI, who seems to be leading the charge for artificial intelligence, and a little bit about elections as well. So we'll start at the beginning with multimodal chatbots. So Cade Metz of the New York Times notes that AI companies are building multimodal systems, meaning AI can handle multiple types of media. For example, OpenAI's latest version of ChatGPT can both generate images and text. The next stage evolution would be systems inhaling diagrams, charts, sounds, and video to then produce their own text, images, and sounds. What are your thoughts on the impact of multimodal chatbots in 2024?
I think it's huge. And I think they're going to become, you know, especially towards the end of the year, become really integrated in our workflows. The reason they're really important is a lot of the way we deal with images right now and text is kind of one after the other. You know, the program interprets, it takes the language, it sends it to an image generator, and then image generator would send back something, an image, or send it back to the text generator to create text. When you start merging it all together, it just creates new use cases. Things like, I mean, I've seen this, you know, you point your phone towards a parking sign to see whether it's okay to park, and it'll tell you whether it is or not. Mm-hmm. But much more sophisticated things, like you mentioned, generating charts from data or doing an interpretation of a picture or things like that. It just, the use cases proliferate once you sort of put it all in one model.
Okay. So do you think most models will be multimodal, or do you think a fair amount will, but you'll still see some single use cases?
Yeah. I mean, you're not going to see the single use case disappeared, but I think when you're talking about chatbots,
yeah,
I think that the flagship chatbots out there are going to be multimodal, just because the things you can do will become a lot more powerful that way. But okay, I think there still will be some single use case models that are, you know, purely language. For instance, if you have something that's optimized for customer service. That might just make sense to make it as powerful and as quick as possible.
Good point.
Just because the smaller the model is, the faster it works, the less compute power, the cheaper it is to use. So you'll see both, but definitely for the top line, I think you're mostly going multimodal.
Okay. A second trend or thing to watch, we should probably say, we wanted to talk about was copyright and questioning whether copyright will be artificial intelligence's 2024 battlefield, because Morgan Marone of Axios certainly thinks so. She points to the New York Times filing a lawsuit against OpenAI and Microsoft in December, claiming their AI systems' wide-scale copying constitutes copyright infringement. OpenAI, in response, says mass scraping of the internet falls under fair use rules. Yuri, do you see copyright being AI's 2024 battlefield?
Yeah, for sure. And two reasons. One is what the New York Times is doing is they have all this content that has been scraped. They want to get a share of it. I think a lot of other big media companies are going to do the same thing, either that or use it as leverage to get a better agreement with OpenAI, Google, and other large AI companies for using their data. So it'll either be used as leverage or as, you know, the basis for a suit. So absolutely, I think it's going to be a big battleground.
Yeah, it's such an important case, because if the New York Times wins, it could embolden others. Our senior director of briefings, Jeremy Goldman, noting that the Times lawsuit could inspire other actions from musicians, authors, comedians against AI, setting industry-wide precedents for copyright. It's going to be interesting to see where folks land on this, Yuri, and a big part of this could be how this case shakes out, because which side of the debate will most publishers land? The Associated Press and our parent company, Axel Springer, are they going to land on that side? That's the side that have struck individual deals with AI companies, saying you can pay us for our data and information. Or are they going to fall on the New York Times side, basically saying, no, you can't, and we're going to sue you if you try?
Yeah, and I think you're also going to see the AI companies try to preempt these suits with links or these deals with these companies. And I read somewhere, I'm not sure where, but that the big AI companies are going to have an inherent advantage because they have the deep pockets to both fight the lawsuits
and
to come up with these deals with the content companies. So there is a danger that it's just going to lock in some of the big players at the expense of some of the more scrappy startups.
Yeah. University of Miami professor of law, Andres Sawicki of Axios, saying that if the courts determined that training the systems constitutes infringement, they thought that it was going to have a really significant impact. And this lawsuit could set OpenAI back quite a bit. The information was pointing out OpenAI's 2024 revenue expected to be about $5 billion. And this lawsuit could jeopardize that, right? Because the Times, they've not asked for a specific amount in damages, but the lawsuit says, quote, it seeks to hold them responsible. And New York Times seeks to hold OpenAI responsible for billions of dollars in statutory and actual damages, close quote. So we don't know exactly what that means in terms of how much money, but if they did have to pay billions of dollars in fines, that could be pretty devastating.
Yeah. I mean, it's such a capital intensive business already. AI is. You need a ton of compute power to both train and to run these programs. And then if you tack on media partnerships, content agreements, it really does tilt the business case for these companies in a way that's, you know, going to leave a lot of losers and maybe fewer winners in the battle.
I was talking to someone about this episode and what we're going to be talking about on the show today. And they asked me, Yuri, they said, who wins this? And a lot of the time I can, you know, you can roughly guess whether, you know, who's going to win on a privacy case or in antitrust. Do you have a sense of how things are going to shake out? Do you have any idea of, you know, New York Times going up against OpenAI for copyright infringement? Any sense of how this plays out?
Well, I mean, I'll preface this by saying I'm not a legal analyst, but I mean, it's a really tricky question whether this stuff is fair use, this content is fair use. So if New York Times is breaking news, it's news that's happening out there, you know, is, you know, what President Biden says fair use? Yeah, of course. If you're scraping that from a New York Times article, is that fair use? Probably. What is the language on top of that that's fair use? And that's the tricky case. And
yeah,
I don't know where the courts are going to fall.
Doing this on a mass scale feels like it falls outside the realm of fair use. I'm fascinated to learn more about fair use, and I'm sure more will come out in this case as the lawyers kind of dig through what that actually means. But using, you know, 5 seconds of a song on, you know, a video that you're putting together to make it a better piece of content seems different from scraping the entire internet and hoovering up as much information as possible to then create a product that you can then make money from.
For sure. And you know, some things are clearer than others. If an artist has a specific style and then you ask an AI program to create another artwork of that style.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that probably is clearly not fair use, that you're infringing on copyrights there. But I think the questions that we're talking about are a lot more grayer.
Yep. Yep. Let's move to our third thing to watch for artificial intelligence in 2024. And we're talking about OpenAI, this company that does seem to be at the forefront of artificial intelligence development. ChatGPT maker OpenAI, they weathered an epic leadership crisis nearly 2 months ago, but enter 2024 beset with uncertainties, writes Scott Rosenberg of Axios. Two of those are, one, as we kind of talked about, making money. A former employee of OpenAI once describing the company as a money incinerator. And two, the remaining question about what spooked board members back in November so much that they ousted for a week CEO Sam Altman. The story there being that the board thought Sam Altman wasn't being transparent enough and they were potentially concerned about this advancement that OpenAI had discovered, and they were a bit nervous about the pace of development. And so that's why you had this whole debacle around leadership for OpenAI. We still don't know the actual truth. There are kind of independent investigations going on. But given that that happened pretty recently, Yuri, what do you think's next for Sam Altman and OpenAI?
Yeah, it's an open question what led to that board revolt. I think the bigger question is, how much of an unfettered business is OpenAI? It was originally formed as a nonprofit, and then it's converted to a capped profit corporation. I think that's gone now too, but it still needs to figure out not only, you know, how hard it wants to go into monetization. And I think, as you mentioned, it does burn through cash. So it's essentially forced as a company to raise huge amounts of money and to sell a lot of, you know, different products tacked on top of it. So it has to decide that. But also this whole board revolt gave competitors a big in. You know, companies no longer want to rely solely on OpenAI. And that's a question that, you know, that's a problem now that OpenAI has to face, that they've opened the door for competitors to get in.
And because of that, are we certain OpenAI will keep its lead? Mr. Rosenberg thinks OpenAI, that kicked off and still leads today's AI boom, remains an enigma. It could be the next Google or the next Netscape. He recounts the Netscape's 1995 IPO ushered in the internet era. But by 1998, 3 years later, the browser pioneer was on the ropes. The next year, in 1999, it got bought by AOL, which crashed and burned, leaving Google and Facebook to harvest the web's profits. So even because it's the forefront right now doesn't mean that it's going to be the front runner forever. Final thing we want to talk about, Yuri, in the lead with regards to expectations for AI in 2024 was the election, or the elections coming up. Sarah Fisher of Axios noting that ChatGPT maker OpenAI says it's rolling out new policies and tools meant to combat misinformation and abuse ahead of the 2024 elections in the US and worldwide. Some of those policies and tools, they wanted real-time news reporting, including attribution and links. They're working with a nonpartisan National Association of Secretaries of State to direct ChatGPT users to canivote.org for authoritative information on US voting and elections. And then other things like not letting folks build applications for political campaigning and lobbying, among some other things. What do you make of OpenAI's election safeguards?
First of all, they're incredibly important. You already saw it a week ago or so with the fake robocall using Biden's voice in New Hampshire. These created, these synthesized media could be huge sources of disinformation. That's one thing.
Especially at the wrong time. There was an Atlantic article from Ross Anderson. And in the article, they were basically saying, imagine if there is a candidate, and there's two people left to run for president, and one of those candidates' voice is cloned, and there's audio of that person criticizing a demographic of people, and that's days before the election. Like, that can swing things so quickly, especially when we've seen elections hinge on hundreds of thousands of votes.
100%. So there's that angle of the synthesized, incorrect, sort of manipulated information. And then there's just, you know, these inherent biases within these programs. programs.
Yes.
And I think that's one of the big focuses or foci, I don't know what the word is, for OpenAI, is to make sure that there aren't these biases towards one side or the mm-hmm. other, mm-hmm. relying on ways, you know, on third-party sources to verify information.
Yep.
So they have to be really careful with that. And I know they also have some program giving grants for democratic oversight, the democratization of building AI models, which is really important as well.
Yep. A huge election year. Ko Yu of Time was pointing out globally, there are more voters than ever in history that will head to the polls as at least 64 countries plus the European Union, representing a combined population of about close to half of the people in the world meant to hold national elections. And so you've got US, India, Indonesia, Mexico, etc. Now, not all of those elections are free and fair, you could argue, but of the ones that are, you've got close to 2 billion people voting this year. So it's not just US elections, it's elections around the world. More people voting have the potential to vote than ever before. And this is the first election cycle where Gen AI tools aren't widely available to folks. I'll close the lead by saying a quick piece from The Economist, Yuri, because I think it sums things up quite well, talking about how AI development will be both fast and slow. The article was arguing that many economists believe Gen AI is about to transform the global economy. There was a paper published last year by Egger Erdil and Tame Besaroglu of research company Epoch, arguing that explosive growth with GDP zooming upwards is plausible with AI capable of broadly substituting for human labor. But a professor at Stanford University saying that he expects AI to power a productivity boom in the coming years, basically saying the change is going to take time. We won't realize everything in 2024. There was a Goldman Sachs analysis suggesting 5% of chief executives expect AI to have a significant impact on their business within 1 to 2 years, just 5%, but 65%, two-thirds, think it will have an impact in the next 3 to 5. AI likely to change the economy, even if it will not do so immediately.
Yeah, different parts of the economy are going to be hit earlier rather than later.
Yes.
Translation services, customer service. I think you're going to see big disruptions there mm-hmm. on the earlier side. You know, more creative roles and things like that. Right now, they're more productivity tools rather than replacement for mm-hmm. humans. I'm not even sure eventually that they will become replacement for jobs, but we'll see. I agree that it's going to come more gradually. The impact on the workforce is going to come more gradually, but the productivity increases are going to come pretty quickly.
Yeah. Yeah. I almost want to throw out the year of AI and just talk about it in waves. It's going to be from now into the future and it's going to come in waves. And this year, we're going to deal with a different wave than we will next year. That's what we got time for the lead. Time now for the second half of the show. Today in other news, just one story, Microsoft's new AI keyboard key. Story one, Microsoft's got a new AI keyboard key. They've announced the biggest change to its keyboards in 30 years with the introduction of an artificial intelligence, or AI key, on new products from February that lets users access Copilot, which is Microsoft's AI tool, on Windows 11 PCs. As Imran Rahman Jones of the BBC notes, Copilot helps users with functions like search, writing emails, summarizing meetings, and creating images. Copilot is based on OpenAI's GPT-4 large language model. For context, Windows 11 users can already access Copilot by pressing the Windows key plus the C key, but this change gives them a dedicated button to access AI. Yuri, how much does this new dedicated AI key move the needle?
I don't think it moves it much at all. I think it's more of a gimmick.
Wow.
I mean, I actually think Copilot is and similar productivity tools are going to be pretty transformative, but adding it to the keyboard, I don't see making it much of a difference. I mean, one of the advantages of AI is there are many ways to launch it. Maybe you can just say, you know, use your voice or something like that. I think mm-hmm. this is a very short-lived and more gimmicky type of introduction.
Interesting. Would you compare it to kind of the Netflix key on a remote control? Like, does that really make people use Netflix more? Is it more seen as like a marketing tool? Because I'm reminded of Netflix. I'm going to watch Netflix. I'm going to watch it regardless of how I get there.
So Netflix, I think, is a little different in that it just, I mean, it does simplify the remote a little bit
yeah.
more than this. But yeah, I don't think it's a big deal.
Okay. Well, I mean, to that point, there are other helpful dedicated buttons already that exist. Mr. Rahman Jones of the BBC pointing out that rival Apple has included a Siri button or option on its touch bar in MacBooks for a few years. And yeah, I don't see personally a ton of people using it. Maybe they haven't had a reason to use it until now, but it doesn't seem like it's moved the needle much thus far, at least. That is all we have time for this episode. Thank you so much, Yuri, for hanging out today.
Yeah, pleasure as always.
Yes, sir. Pleasure is all mine. Thank you to Victoria, who edits the show, James, Stuart, and Sophie, who also help make the podcast possible. And thanks to everyone for listening in. We hope to see you tomorrow for the Behind the Numbers Weekly Listen and eMarketer Video Podcast. If you do want to watch that episode, which you can now do, you can head to YouTube at Insider Intelligence, /podcasts. Or you can listen to us the normal way at the normal places.